I was learning that it might not be much more work to go after a bigger property than it would be a smaller property, let's say. Once you have all the systems and everything in place, and once you understand how the business itself works, it's basically just a number of doors, right, that you're just adding on, aside from the fact that obviously you need to do a capital raise and you need to have certain KPIs and things like that in place. But the idea of a, let's say, an 8-unit or an 80-unit is somewhat similar, obviously with some nuances here and there.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Nico holds a master's degree in Spanish language education and spent the last 18 years as a Spanish teacher. Apart from teaching and investing in real estate, he is an avid surfer, woodworker, traveler, and extremely proud father. Nico began investing in real estate in 2012 with a single family development project and has since scaled to owning 194 units as a general partner. He hosts a monthly meetup group titled the Multifamily Investors Network New York and also hosts the Small Axe podcast. Nico, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam. Thank you so much for having me today.
Hey, man. The pleasure is all mine. I mean, loads of fun. I'm just reading through your bio and I'm like, oh my gosh, like a Spanish teacher and also a real estate investor. And man, just walk us through that process. I ask the same three questions to everybody who comes on. Can you quickly tell us, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
So I started, well, let's go back to college. I started with a degree in business marketing management with and a minor in economics. And after college, I didn't like what I was doing. I was going door to door selling, you know, frozen meat. And if I would sell a refrigerator a day, that would be like the highlight of my month, right? And it just wasn't really intriguing. I didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy the whole process. I didn't really like selling, right? So I ended up traveling the world. I went to Hawaii for a few months with a friend of mine. And I ended up going to Spain for a few months to visit my family. And while in Spain, I said, what am I doing? You know, I love the Spanish culture. My family is from here. I grew up, you know, spending summers in Spain. I said, this is what I should be teaching the world. So I went right back to school for teaching a year after graduating college. And that's it, man. I jumped into teaching right away. I did like a teacher fellowship program. And from then on, I was off to the races doing my master's at night, and they paid for my master's. And then in 2009, I got burnt out. I was teaching for 5 years at this point, and I just got burnt out. And I said, I'm out of here. I'm going to resign from the system, from the New York City school system, and I'm going to submit a letter of resignation, go to the Canary Islands, which is off the coast of Morocco, owned by Spain, and I'm going to be a business owner. This is what I told myself. And I got there and I just lacked all the tools necessary and skills and connections necessary to be a business owner. I had no clarity either. I just said I wanted to be a business owner. There was nothing specific that I'd written down. And I get there and I end up teaching again. So I was teaching English in a school over there, surfing all the time. And then I taught English for a year, came back and got a new job teaching in a different school and still traveling. Now, while I was traveling, I landed in a beautiful, beautiful place in Nicaragua. And I said, you know what? I love this place. I'm going to buy a piece of land here. This is in 2012 now. I'm going to buy a piece of land and I'm going to put a little house on it and use it as a vacation home. And this was my idea. And I did it. I bought a piece of land. I built a house on it. And just this weekend, finally, let's call it 8-9 years later, I rented it out for the first time. So that's basically my introduction to real estate, right? It was a small development project in 2012 that got me started.
That's awesome, man. I love the follow your dreams courage. You know, I think that's always it's an admirable trait that, you know, people, I guess I probably admire it because I don't tend to have it. I always want to make the plan and try to do the thing that's a sure thing. So good for you for going for it. You know, so you started out, you know, doing that project, you got that done. You're just now renting it out. So you used it for a vacation home for 8 or 9 years. Is that right?
No. So the bureaucracy down there is crazy. It ended up taking a few years just to get the title cleared before I could even build anything. So we started building in 2015-ish, but I was also having, you know, I also had to rebuild my home here in New York because of Sandy after Hurricane Sandy, it got demolished. We had to demolish the home and build a brand new home. We had a lawsuit. And so it ended up just taking a long time for a variety of reasons, but finally finished it now, like literally this past weekend.
Wow. That's awesome, man. I'm sure you've learned some things through that process that, that have applied to, you know, the things that you own now. What's it been like moving into different asset classes and scaling up?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, I joined the Jake and Gino community, which a lot of people are, I'm sure, are familiar with, back in the November of 2019. So I'm coming up on 2 years right now on that. And I began looking at larger multifamily properties right away. And my coaches in that community were just so supportive, so helpful. And they helped me analyze things and look at things in a different way, you know, from a business perspective. And when you're looking at something less emotionally, right, and less, like I had ties to this one little property and it really emotionally dragged me around, you know, on a roller coaster. But when you look at something from a business perspective and you learn how to make business decisions on things, that can really change the game. So I was learning that it might not be much more work to go after a bigger property than it would be a smaller property, let's say. Once you have all the systems and everything in place, and once you understand how the business itself works, it's basically just a number of doors, right, that you're just adding on, aside from the fact that obviously you need to do a capital raise and you need to have certain KPIs and things like that in place. But the idea of a, let's say, an 8-unit or an 80-unit is somewhat similar, obviously with some nuances here and there.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what was the first deal that you got across the finish line as a general partner?
That is a 194. Here we go. Zero to nothing. Zero to 194 units. 194 unit property in Columbus, Ohio. It was a portfolio of two properties. And we closed that. I closed with a group of guys, group of friends of mine in the Jake and Gino community in November of 2020. So this was basically a year after jumping into that community and jumping into the education and being coached and mentored and looking at 100 plus deals. We got one in Columbus, and this was not my target market. And I was not even considering, you know, investing there, but the deal was a great deal. I ended up jumping in as a co-sponsor with this team that I met through the Jake and Gino community.
That's awesome, man. And that's a lot of times the way it goes, where you're not looking, but yeah, you're doing the things that make deals like that possible, right? You're networking with people who are out looking, who are looking for co-sponsors. You're getting your reps in. It just came from a direction. And if you weren't getting your reps in, you'd have never gotten this deal across the finish line. So that's, you know, kudos to you for getting that project done. What are some things that you have learned, you know, post closing of that and then moving forward? I guess now we're in October of 2021. What has the last 10, 11 months? What have been some things you've learned since then in your real estate business?
Sam, so much, man. So much. You know, it's like a kid in a candy store in the beginning, right? You're like, oh, I just want to buy all this multifamily. And you're so excited. You don't necessarily know everything that it's going to happen in the future, and you never do with anything, but you don't know the punches you're going to take, and you're going to take punches along the way. So prior to getting into this 194 unit, I was looking at a lot of properties down in the Tampa market. That's was my specific target market. I said, I'm not going to stop focusing on this one market, even though I don't live there. I would travel there. I'm not going to stop focusing on this market until I nail some. I made some great broker relations, property manager relations. I had local bank relations. I thought I had everything, and I just couldn't make sense of the deals down there. And when this deal came across my plate, I felt, you know, the 194 unit in Columbus, I felt a little bit like, you know, I had been working on a marketing machine for the prior year, pushing out content monthly about and really highlighting Tampa and blasting it out to my investor database of Tampa being the spot to invest in. And all of a sudden I'm investing in Columbus. So come time to ask people to invest with me in Columbus, it was a little challenging. They were confused, you know, and rightfully so. You know, why are you now investing in Columbus? I thought you were talking about Tampa for the past 12 months. And it was a tough conversation to have, you know. It was like, well, I know I can understand any market really, but now I had to kind of sell it to people as opposed to attracting them into a deal that I've been working on for so long. You know, Tampa is the best. Tampa has these X, Y, and Z metrics. I looked at this deal and I didn't like it for this reason, or I liked this and I lost out on this deal because of X, Y, and Z. And now all of a sudden I have no experience in a new market and I'm asking my investors to come invest with me. So it was challenging to bring investors onto that. I can tell you that I came up with $250K to come in, and I thought that was terrible. I really beat myself up over it, but it was actually, now that I'm thinking about it, it was pretty good for my first raise, having, you know, never having any GP experience, never having, you know, anything else under my belt. I mean, that was really my first deal, right? So, and it wasn't even in my quote unquote target market, right? So I think that I learned a lot that I really, of how I should be talking to my investors, how I need to be educating them that I can really find deals. I understand how to analyze markets. I understand how to analyze deals as a whole, not necessarily just in Tampa, right? So I found that problem with what I was doing. And then upon closing in November of 2020, we took on, this was a heavy lift, you know, so 194 units. There were eight of us as the general partnership team, and none of us have ever syndicated a deal before, but the other guys had a lot of experience in multifamily in general, so with JVs or with just, you know, doing a lot of even bigger projects, but just never syndicated a deal. Two of the guys, Renee and Abiel, they're from Florida. They had a construction team that they do, and they do this type of heavy lift all the time with C-class properties where they'll bring in their own construction team. And they will spend a few months at a location and renovate. And that's what they did. So in my mind, I was like, this is going to be awesome. These guys are going to go in and kick butt. And they did. So they had their team drive from Florida all the way up to Columbus. And they spent the subsequent 4 or 5 months there renovating about 70 units. So like, and in my mind, you know, in theory, you're like, okay, cool. If you like, I'm like a very visual person and I can see 70 units just being done, go, 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 and go. And, but the reality is there's a lot more that goes on with renovating 70 units and then getting, you know, first of all, people out of them, getting people back into them. And then we had the serious issues of supply chain issues that, you know, was a global thing. So our business plan was solid and would have been very solid had this been normal circumstances, but it was, you know, November, the election of 2020, it was year of COVID. There was a lot of things going on that caused us to, I guess, not necessarily stay strictly with the business plan. Sam, stop me whenever you want.
No, keep rolling. I like this.
Okay. And it was, you know, eye-opening for me. So here we are, you can call these guys professionals and they're killing it. Like we, it was terrifying for me because I have investors invested in this. Now we dropped down to about 60, 61% occupancy throughout this process. And I'm like shaking, telling my investors it's going to be okay. This is all part of the process, but how do I really know that? Did I really go through this before? No, I'm always, you know, we have weekly calls with our property management team. I'm on every call, really focused, really just, but it stressed me out more than it would have if it was just me who invested. It was me and my, you know, my investors, my beloved investors who invested in this. So I really put a lot of stress and thought into this. Now, we said that we were going to refinance the property because we had, at this time, we had a private loan. We ended up actually closing for cash in two weeks. That's why we got such a great deal on this. We bought it for half price, essentially. But there was a lot of deferred maintenance. So we ended up saying we were going to refinance in 6 months after closing, and we didn't. We weren't able to at that time. So this is all news that I have to express to the investors right now. In my head, I know that once all is said and done, based on the activity that we're getting, we were getting interest in the property from other potential buyers already at this point in the springtime. People were amazed that we got it for so cheap. People were looking at this property for so long, but we had, you know, a solid negotiating team that went in 2 weeks and closed this thing. Now, 6 months later, we weren't able to accomplish a business plan of refinancing. And it turns out today that it's okay, but it freaked me out, obviously, as you can imagine, expressing this to my investors and saying, when are we going to refinance? We were at that point at like 75% occupancy. We were going up, right? We were moving the needle up, but it wasn't anywhere near where we needed to be. So today we're just about 90% occupied, which is phenomenal, but it takes that long. It's almost a year to get back up to 90% occupancy. We're beating rent projections, which is excellent, right? But we haven't been able to make distributions. And, you know, we don't see any money from it either. So it's not like we're collecting money and not paying our investors. No, none of us are seeing money. But recently we were approached this past month by some serious buyers. And we said, you know what? We got it this far. We're now looking at a refi. We're just at 90%. Why don't we just, based on the offer price that we got, we can basically get a 1.9 equity multiple with just about a year in this thing, surpass the year mark to avoid the short-term capital gains for our investors and get out of it. And that's the route we're going to be doing. So we ended up taking this thing to market, and we just finished the marketing package last week. and got a couple of pretty solid offers. So I'm very happy with the way things are going now. Although, like I said before, we weren't able to make distributions and we haven't, you know, it's just been a roller coaster of terror and fear for me. Now we did, Sam, just about, we did project only 2%, you know, for returns year one, cash on cash. So it's not that we're far off that and we're going to hit a similar return equity multiple within 1 year. So the IRR is going to be pretty high, you know, instead of the 5-year hold that we had planned.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in the end, you're going to do really right by your investors. It just, you know, it's going to play out differently than you had hoped. And that's tough, man. On the first deal, you know, the first time you bring money in, I think, not that you ever get numb to it, because you never want to lose. You never want to lose a dollar. That's Warren Buffett's like rule number one and two, never lose money, right? But at the same time, you know, the first one is always the most tenuous, you know, white knuckle, like, oh crud, this has got to go really, really right. Otherwise, you know, I got egg on my face, or so it seems. You know, there's a couple of thoughts I had, you know, when you shared that story. Is that we always say there's three things, not that you came here to listen to me, but there's three things you can deal or you can they're part of a deal. It's the team, it's the market, and of course, and then it's the deal itself. And once you've closed, the team and the market can't be changed, but the deal can. And so I think that's what you guys have done well, is you've changed the deal. Maybe it didn't work out as you had planned. Maybe you guys took longer to do rehab. Maybe you went over, but I don't know. You know, it's clearly it didn't hit the projections you wanted it to out of the gate, but you were able to effectively manipulate the deal to really still make it a healthy, you know, healthy profit center, it sounds like, for you guys by the time you get it sold. So, you know, good job getting that done. That's fantastic.
Thanks, Sam.
What have been some things here? I guess here's another question for you. Are you still hunting in Tampa?
It's a good question. And yes, so I changed my approach. I realized a fault that I had, and my main fault was that I was not there. I was not boots on the ground. So for the past 2 years, I've been focusing on everything. And then I tried to get very specific on a market, you know, within the first year, thinking that the more specific I can get on a market, the more powerful I can be, the more laser focused I am, the better I can find. I knew every single deal that was going on down in Tampa, but there were certain listings that I wasn't seeing. There were, you know, I got some pocket listings, yes, but there were certain things that even prior to pocket listings, you know, somebody just didn't want to go through the marketing material and they say, hey, I know this person could close on something like this. And it would be like a friend of mine and they would close. And I would see friends of mine getting in these deals in Tampa. And I said, you know what? I don't have a solid boots on the ground partner. Now I found one and I ended up, you know, landing a deal in Tampa in spring of 2021. I found it myself. I had my boots on the ground partner go check it out. You know, I did everything right. And this, in my mind, now with this new team, with the boots on the ground, a solid boots on the ground partner, everything was going great. But Sam, I'm going to tell you, I got kicked in the face again. So here we go. This was a wholesale deal. It was a 20 unit deal in Tampa. The price was excellent. Now it was 112 a door is what I negotiated it down to. I thought I did a great job. And I did a good job. If you think 112 a door is a lot, it wasn't in this area. You know, it's a solid B area in Tampa. And now things are trading for a minimum of 130, 150 even, you know. So, but we got it under contract. Since it was a wholesale deal, they wanted a 3-week close. So we got on the phone with a few lenders and we stuck with this one lender who said that they can definitely make this happen. That was where I went wrong, because I didn't have the experience of knowing that sometimes lenders may blow some smoke up your booty, right? And I didn't really realize that. I thought, we interviewed a few. He was like, yeah, we'll get you to close. We even talked to the CEO of this company and they were saying, yeah, we'll get you to close. I'm not going to mention any names or anything. But so there were issues with getting appraisals, and obviously a 3-week close is very quick, but we ended up getting the appraisal done, and we had to do it a residential appraisal as opposed to a commercial appraisal because of the fact that we were limited on time. We had the option because there were five quadplexes, and we could have also done a commercial appraisal as well, but we chose the quicker route, which we were told was the residential. The night prior to closing, the appraisal comes in and it was off, you know, so the as-is value was perfect. The ARV was way off and they were not going to give us our construction loan. And we went that day within 24 hours from seeing or from underwriting with an 87 LTV and 100% construction loan down to a 70 LTV with no construction loan. So We had all the money in the bank. We had everything ready to go. And, you know, we had to come up with more money, about $250,000 more. And then we would have been walking into a bridge loan with no construction loan. So we were looking at another $250,000 after that, just looking to get in and try to refinance that. It was a poor, you know, it was a terrible situation. So we ended up walking from that deal, eating our $50,000 deposit plus, you know, legal fees and inspection fees and stuff like that.
Oh my God.
This is just like a few months ago, man, kicked in my butt.
Yeah. At least, I mean, hey, you're laughing about it. Or maybe it's that like laugh. I'm trying not to cry laugh. I'm not quite sure. What were some things you could have done differently to have vetted that lender?
Yeah. Well, okay. First of all, I did not know that it was, I thought that what they say and what they put on paper is I thought that it was set in stone. I did not know that it could change. And one of my partners hinted towards, he said, you know, I'm not sure if I trust this lender. And that's actually when we started calling other lenders. And this one guy said, well, we can get you to close no matter what. And I knew this other guy, but for some reason we stuck with this one lender. And what could I have done differently? I could have, I guess, number one, realized, had that information that lenders aren't always necessarily going to deliver the day of, and that those numbers can change. Had I realized that, perhaps I would have underwritten for that. What we had tried to do when we knew that, you know, like halfway through this process, it was 2 weeks in, let's say, I knew that there was the possibility, because one of my partners said that, there was the possibility of these numbers changing. So what we then looked at was underwriting for a traditional conventional loan. I mean, this thing was 90% occupied. We could have gone conventional or even LTC, you know, with a community bank, but we would have needed an extension to do that. We reached out to the seller personally. We reached out to our wholesaler who was, you know, communicating to the seller with us, and they both said, no way, we're not doing the extension. It was almost like they wanted us to lose that $50,000. And then they ended up selling it. Like recently, I bitterly looked up who bought it, and there was three guys that bought it or whatever. But yeah, so what could I have done differently? I guess known that this is something that happens in the industry, and then underwrite it differently, not put down the $50,000 hard, understand that maybe we needed an extension or maybe negotiate an extension with that contract prior.
Yeah. If you had, so you guys, and just to recap on this, you guys didn't have any extension clauses in the contract.
None. Right.
Got it. Right. Yeah. That could have, and that would have bought you the time to go out and find an alternate lender, or, you know, just at least give you a chance to make it all work out. Man, those are hard knocks early on. You know, I feel like a lot of times you, or at least I'd listen to podcasts and you hear, you know, people come on, they're like, well, you know, we started off with 10,000 units. Now we own 100 billion units. And we just grew pretty quickly and it was all pretty systematic and off we went to the races. And you're like, well, you're missing a lot of things. So maybe you're just getting your hard knocks out of the way early. Right. But again, you know, to reiterate, you're not getting any hard knocks really on your first deal. You're 1.9x in your multiple, or your equity in 12 to 18 months. So that's anytime you have another one of those, please call me. if you know that's going to happen. So, man, Nico, those are a lot of hard lessons. How do you keep having the courage to keep pressing on?
So I didn't, Sam, you know, it was a month of my time when I didn't look at any real estate. I was turned off from real estate in general. One of my coaches and friends, my friend Hadar, we just had a talk and he was like, Nico, he's like, you don't look the same. And I told him everything that happened. He's like, come on, man. He's like, this happens to everybody. He's like, just wake up. You got to get going. And literally that's all I needed. The next day I was motivated and rock and rolling again. But you know what? If you're going to swing with the big boys, if you're going to swing for the fences, you want to play hardball, this might happen. Now, in retrospect, and this is maybe something that people can take into consideration, don't hesitate to go for a 5, 6, 7, 8 unit. And I'm actually going to take a step back and just go for that and get some traction in the market so that I can get, you know, people can see what I'm doing. I can have proof of concept. The brokers can see, whoa, this guy's closing. Who cares if it's an 8-unit deal? Yes, that's still awesome. And the returns can be just as good or better. And then you can have more equity, let's say, in a deal, right? So different games with different sizes and different types of properties. But don't think, people out there, listeners, that just because you're going for a 300-unit deal that you're now all of a sudden going to be, you know, financially free, rich, and it's going to be easy. And it's there's just different ways of doing things. And it's not necessarily good or bad. It's just different, right?
Yeah, man, that's absolutely right. I think all of us at some point have faced that, you know, pivot point where you go, oh my gosh, like, what am I doing? What am I doing? And maybe I just need to rethink this. So good for you. And it's great to have friends around as well. Help talk you out of those, you know, places. Talk to me a little bit about your Small Acts podcast. What's that about?
So originally I started the Small Acts podcast with the thought process of letting people know that you only need a small act to build an empire. And I'm trying to be that. I'm trying to be the proof of concept. Like, I start with no money, right? I don't have any money. I'm a school teacher. I literally, like, my income is basically nothing. I have, but all, after all bills are paid, I have no money left over. Sometimes I can't even eat, right? And so I'm trying to show that it's what's possible with the tools that we have. We can sharpen our tools. We can get better at things. We can learn, right? We can utilize and leverage our network and people around us and our education to become bigger and better things in life and our mindset, right? So we can, my idea was to interview people who have showed that it only takes a small axe to build an empire. Now, that was the original premise. And I just kind of been floating with it because I've had so many guests reach out to me that wanted to be on it that I'm just kind of taking them and enjoying those conversations too. So not necessarily everybody on the podcast begins with nothing, but the stories are great and the conversations that I have are great nonetheless.
Man, that's awesome. Kudos to you again as well for getting that done. No small feat. Nico, final four questions are this. If you had just $20,000 to invest in real estate and with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
Good question, man. So right now, today, what I would do is I would put $10,000 toward, or however much it is, towards the Raise Masters to learn how to raise capital better with Hunter Thompson, right? So that's 10 of it. The other 10, I would invest in a deal. So I'm going to go into a deal as a JV, right? I want to use that $10,000. I'm not going in empty-handed. I'm coming with $10,000 of my hard-earned money for a deal that I found, right? I'm going to find the deal. I'm going to, you know, lock it up, get on the contract, put $10,000 in, bring in some other investors.
Right. I love that. I love that. It's very clear, very actionable. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
One mistake in real estate would be, I guess, just not taking action, right? I think that where I hesitated in the beginning, you know, of thinking I needed to go bigger, that stopped me from taking action. Had I just took an action and jumped into a deal with somebody, whether that be, you know, putting in a few $1,000s as a small JV just to get some traction going. I think that's so important, is to get some traction on a small deal. It doesn't have to be a big deal. Just get moving. And that's what I would have done differently. I would have jumped into a smaller deal sooner.
Yeah, it's amazing how success, no matter how small, begets more success. So it just gives you that confidence to keep moving forward. I love that. Question number three is this. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
So I give back, right? I created a program here at school where I work. And it's a morning program. And the thought came about when I realized, you know, a few years ago that there were so many gun shootings and things that were troublesome in the world. And I know that I have an influence on kids who are very influential, right? I can malleable. So I said, why don't I reach out to these kids to try to make them understand the world better, right? And I thought a lot about this. And I said, what these kids are lacking is an expressive outlet. They don't know the terminology. They're not socially and emotionally aware of themselves enough to express how they're feeling. They're bottling up their feelings and then they're exploding, right? So I created a morning program where kids can come in and get some exercise, right? I had an exercise program, aside from coaching and other things, exercise program and a meditation program in a middle school in the morning. Can you imagine getting kids to sit down? And I had a meditation teacher come in and do like this whole thing. And we learned meditation and we did it for 2 years. Now that's one thing that I do. And I'm going to add another thing, if you don't mind. During the summers, I work as a surf instructor, right? Now, 9 years ago, I decided to take the surf instruction to a special needs camp. And I now work, and we created this program for special needs campers, anywhere from 4 years old to 70 plus years old, with all different types of special needs. And I take them surfing. I teach them surfing. And I've been doing it for 9 years now. We created a great program that's working wonderfully in the biggest special needs camp on Long Island.
Man, that's awesome. Good for you. Good for you. Teaching surfing, man. That's fantastic. And I have no idea how you got a group of middle schoolers to take a meditation class. You must have a special gift. So well done. Really, really enjoyed that. Nico, last question. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, shoot over to my website, www.smallaxecommunities.com. So small axe, A-X-E, communities with an S at the end.com.
Awesome. Nico, thank you so much for your time today and sharing your stories here. Certainly appreciate that.
Thank you, Sam. I appreciate you too.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.